Monday, December the 20th, 1943. My diary. 0830. Off with Lepton and Walker, looking for a piano. Span easy first. Place has been hammered to bits by artillery, but people still live in it. No piano. On to Capua. No piano. On to Santa Maria La Fosse. No piano. We weren't having much luck. I went into the Teatro Garibaldi, hoping we might knock off the piano. As I entered, I heard someone playing a splendid rendering of the Liszt's Concerto No. 2 in B minor. The pianist was a young American sergeant. Outside again, I walked around the street markets, and, so my diary says, for some unknown reason, I bought an aluminium washing basin. On the off chance, I asked the old vendor if he knew where I could get a piano. Immediately he said, Si, vengo qui domani, alla mezzogiorno. I tell Lieutenant Walker, but he has already had a success. He too was to go to an address at 2 o'clock tomorrow. So we repaired to a restaurant. Strange the memories that exist for me of those days. The cities of the Campania seemed grey and dank, the streets permanently wet or muddy. The Italians looked drab. A sort of melancholia lay upon the land. Mind you, it was winter. But it didn't affect me, as I was by nature hypothyroid and mindlessly happy, ha ha ha! But I remember those atmospheres as though it were but yesterday. Meantime, back at the farm, we hear tales of Mussolini holding out in northern Italy.
Ah, what can he do? Says Gallivant. I mean, he's what, 60s? He's screwing this bird. What's her name? Clara Petrucci. He's got a few arty herberts in black shirts on two-stroke motorbikes, waving daggers on parades outside ruined Roman arches. What do you think it's going to lead to? I mean, Hitler must have been off his bloody nut to have him rescued.
Well, said Tume philosophically, Musso might have earned him money.
There was a long pause, and then the surprised voice of Jack Shapiro chimes in.
Here. I never thought of Hitler having money.
I mean, does he have to go into a shop and say, 10 woodbines, and have you got change of a quid? And can I have a few shillings for the gas meter?
White says, well, maybe not, but he has to have his barnet cut. The barber can't do it for nothing. Someone has to sack up for Hitler's haircuts.
Well, the German people pay for it, said Bombardier Deans.
The German people? Edging laughed. Haircuts only cost a couple of bob. How do you divide 2 bob between 95 million krauts?
Oh, they don't, continued Dean. They take it in turns to pay.
Oh, I wonder whose turn it is this week, said White.
You never know, said Shapiro. It's a reign of terror. They never know who's next to pay for Hitler's haircut. Here he stood and dramatised. Suddenly, in the middle of the night, boom, boom, there's a knock on the door. And that's a lot. The haircut payment scored are there.
Oh, well, I suppose all the Jews left in Germany pray for Hitler to go balding, said one gunner.
At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we arrive at a house. Lieutenant Walker straightened his hat, and the reason why was soon revealed. A very pretty girl answered the door. From the truck, I heard him speaking in broken, shattered Italian. He was full of smarmy smiling and head-waggling, pulling out all the stops. Concluding, she bid him farewell, and he lingered till the last viewer was obscured by the door.
Very interesting, sir, I said as he returned. But the, piano?
Ah, yes, the piano. We have to collect that tomorrow, he said, looking dreamily ahead. Dirty little devil. Tuesday, December the 21st, 1943. My diary. The page is blank. Why? Who knows? I usually made up my diary last thing at night. I'm almost sure what stopped me entering it was an outbreak of drooling by Spike Deans. I remember it was late at night. We were in the Gerard's billet. We had got our brazier going, two in fact, and several of us were seated around them, drinking our own brew-ups and smoking. Some of the lads were already in bed. Among the leaders was Gunner White. He was sitting up, smoking a dog end and clutching his brown mug. The calm was broken by the entrance of Lance Bombardier Deans and Gunner Jamjar Griffin, and a few more piss artists.
What's this? Said Deans.
He removed his hat and very carefully aimed it at a distant point. Then he threw it. It landed anywhere. So we all wondered what we had watched it for.
Where were you aiming, you cunt? Said White. I was not aiming at anything, said Deans. It was just a display of joie de vivre. Joie de fucking vivre. What's that?
It means, my dearest heart, joy of living.
There's no fucking joy in living, was the immediate reply.
Dean sat at the foot of Gunnar White's bed.
Darling, he said, have you missed me? Then, grabbing White's feet through the blanket, said, whose little feety-poos are these, eh?
White squirmed uneasily.
Get off, he said. Get off.
Deans, still holding his white feet to the blanket, knelt.
Oh, dearest, is upset. Has someone upset my dearest, whose little feet I'm holding through this valuable counterpane?
Bugger off, giggled White.
Deans moves his hand up to White's shins. And whose little leggy-poos are these?
Ah, they the ones my dearest has been dancing on all day on fields of daisies.
Deans moves his hands up to White's thighs. Go off! Go on! Bugger off, giggled White, who moved uneasily, but not enough to spill his tea. And of this, Deans knew he had White trapped. Nothing will make a gunner spill his char. It was as predictable as the greedy monkey who couldn't get his food-filled fist back to the bars.
Darling has been lonely without her diddums to love her, hasn't she?
Deans runs his hands, Charles Boyle-like, up the blankets on White's thighs.
A small group of interested spectators have gathered around the scene. Deans starts to massage White's thighs, with White himself laughing, saying, Someone get the bugger off! Get the bugger off!
Bugger off, darling. You want your darling who brings you romance on an Italian farm to bugger off?
Then, with a lightning move of his hand, Deans grabs White's cobblers.
Ow! A great yell from White, who tries to escape, and the whole bed collapses sideways to the floor, exposing White naked from the waist downward. Deans let out a horrified gasp, whoa, and lunges forward, his quivering finger pointing at White's wedding tackle.
What's this? He said, lifting it up. Oh, while I was away, my darling has been unfaithful to me.
There was a round of applause, and there ended the romantic interlude.
I might say life wasn't all gaiety. Our file's diary at the Times mentioned, boy, am I browned off with this godforsaken army. We've been here a week and still no recreational trips to Naples. I've had 4 hours in Naples while others have had days. Doug Kidgel is there with the Scammels and some chaps for the guns, lucky devils. I suppose money won't last long among those thieving bloody Italians who are still charging 4 times the value of the goods. I'm sick and tired of this dragging war and dictatorship within this lousy tin god-ridden army. Give me peace or I'll go mad. And what does the army do to try and cheer us up while the Yanks live in luxury at the base, kidding themselves they're winning the war and sitting pretty? The whole system stinks. Well, there you have it. I wonder if Churchill knew all this.
Wednesday, December the 22nd, 1943. Battery orders. The following men have been chosen for GOC's parade, Santa Maria La Fosse. Breakfast, 06:30, parade 07:30, and bus 07:45, arrive 08:15, parade 08:30, march past. Best battle dress, lanyards will be worn, all webbing to be blankoed, full FSMO, less small and big pack. Rifles will not be carried. As each one saw his name on the roll, he gave a groan and slumped away like a broken man. The one word that destroyed them was blanco. It struck terror into us all. In a disbelieving voice, Sergeant King reads, concert party, excuse guard in lieu of rehearsals. Morning parade has gaps in its ranks.
It's the concert party, sir, comforts B.S.M. Griffin.
There's 60 men missing, said Major Jenkins. What are they putting on, Aida?
We have sent for Driver Kidgel in Naples. The guns and the Scammels are at the workshop being overhauled.
He's not being overhauled, no. He and his oily bloody mates are sitting on their fat asses saying phew as they exhaust themselves playing pontoon and only move for meals and selling petrol. Half of them are freezing to death as they've sold their blankets. Some of them are already in the Mafia.
On the morning of December the 22nd, his lordship, Kidgel, arrives in a stately three-tonner. He's waving from the window like royalty, and the subjects are returning it with certain signs from the waist down. He drives up to Edgington and I, who are trying to make one cigarette do the job of 20. Short-art Kidgel is preparing to leap from the cabin, but this he really needs a parachute.
It's an insult, he said. Why didn't they send the rolls?
Rolls? Rolls? Are you still bloody hungry, I said.
Let me take the royal big pack and count the royal cigarettes. He'd done all right for fags in Naples. I bought them on the black market, he said, as I unearthed 10 packets. Edson was walking behind, holding up Kijil's overcoat like an ermine cape. Bombardier Dean spots the entourage, runs forward with his ground sheet, and throws it before the dwarf driver. "'Tis the Virgin Queen,' he chortles. "'He's timed at his rival well, Kijil. It's lunch. "'Where's the cookhouse?' he said, forming a queue on his own. "'The sight of a well-prepared stage had impressed him. "'Bloody marvellous,' said he. "'Can you eat it? Where's the cookhouse? "'Hey, where's the cookhouse?' "'We watched as Kijil devoured a third helping of duff, "'as though he'd been adrift with Captain Bligh. "'Kijil licks his knife. "'My motto is, today I live, tomorrow I die.' Well, it won't be from bloody starvation, Kijil. Meanwhile, back at the stage, Sid Carter and a group of minions are performing miracles, using coloured crepe paper and bunting. The stage looks splendidly seasonal, even front curtains on runners. Mangelwurzel Wenham had installed footlights. Watch this, he said, and lowered the lights. Caw, said appreciative Kijil. Nearly as dim as you are, you bugger, said Wenham. The piano has arrived. It's an aged black upright. Edgington supervised the unloading as though it were a Bechstein. However, it would sound more like Frankenstein. As he struck the first chord, the response was like running an iron bar around the spokes of a bicycle. "'What bloody fool chose this?' gasped Edgington. "'I did,' said Lieutenant Walker. "'Isn't it satisfactory? I mean, it looked all right.' "'Oh, it looks all right, sir. That's all you can do. Look at it.' "'Oh, dear.' Lieutenant Walker was obviously distressed. After all, he was an officer.' And here he was being told he was a musical ignoramus. That piano set me back to the tune of 800 lira. Well, sir, that's the only tune you'll get out of that. That afternoon, armed with pliers, Edgington and I tuned the piano. As he tightened the first string, it snapped with the sound of a bullet ricocheting. B.S.M. Griffin entered at that moment to see us flatten the floor. Kijil reads the piano manufacturer's name. Bertarelli, Milano. Bertarelli? Don't they make ice cream? Yes, Edgington. They mix it in the piano. By sheer effort, we managed to tune the piano to a reasonable state. Getting the thing on the stage, we dropped it. Oh, fuck no, groaned the despairing Edgington. Don't worry, said Shapiro. I cocky you. It can't make it any worse. The concert. We had been overwhelmed with months of jokes, ideas, etc. Most of them too terrible to perform, and some suggestions were impossible to perform. Who in God's name would tolerate Gunner Chalky White singing Ave Maria nude in army boots. The best we can do is to pick the least offensive, I said. They're all bloody offensive, said Gemma Griffin, who was manager of the company. Gunner White gives a soppy grin and says, General Alexander said we must be on the offensive at all times. Ha ha ha! You can't sing Ave Maria in the nude. Some of the Arte farmers and their wives have been invited. Well, I've got a good voice, said White. Well, you've got a big prick as well, I said. They don't have to look at it. How could they miss it? Eyes like good singing, not with your prick hanging out. Edgington Files and I have written a reasonably funny hillbilly act. We set about making beards by unravelling rope and brushing it into shape. We used boot polish to blacken them. Behold, said Jamjar Griffin, holding up four ragged shirts. It was just what we wanted for hillbilly costumes. Where do you get them? I pinched them off a washing line. Keep your eyes open for four eyes, naked from the waist up. Using miles of adhesive tape, Edgington and Files are affixing megaphones to the muzzles of our rifles to give them the appearance of blunderbusses. Sergeant Donaldson prepares blank ammunition by pulling the bullets from the cartridges like teeth. Now, be careful how you point. These will give a flash 10 foot long. Don't worry. That bastard Jink will be in the front row. We'll point them all at him. Ha ha ha, said Jemgar. A 10-foot-long flash could make an old woman very happy, said Gunner White. Jamdar Griffin is organising the traditional army seating. Brass sets in front, rabble at the back. We had the battery office working overtime, typing and duplicating programmes. The pre-Christmas spirit was starting to pervade, and everyone seemed full of bonhomio alcohol. After lunch, a truck is going to Capua, and some of us hitch a ride. There, driver Sears parks his truck off the road. Immobilizes it. That is, he leaves it without a driver. Capua? Of course. Hannibal and his Ares had knocked the shit out of the Romans just outside here. He'd gone, but the Romans were now in cafes selling coffee in cups that looked suspiciously like thimbles with handles on. Ought to bring our own bleeding mug, said Sears. 30 lira a bleeding cup. It cost 30 lira.
Because it is real Brazilian coffee, said the proprietor, and he should have added, stolen from Marabara with allies. However, it was worth it to see the pretty girls seated around. Those eyes. Itai girls must have the biggest in the world. To get a smile from one changed the shape of the day. It certainly changed the shape of your body. Help! The evening ended with a gunner's beauty contest. The first entrant was Bomberly Milligan, wearing a towel and a bra made from army socks. Deans announced me as Miss Broccoli of 1904, winner of last year's Never Been Shag contest. I'm followed by Gunner Devine, draped in a blanket. He is Miss Various Veins in Liverpool and other areas. Devine turned to reveal a bare bum. Miss Various Veins is wearing a peekaboo skirt with a view of Oscar Wilde. Close behind comes lovely Gunner White in a gas cape. Miss Conduct of Battersea is wearing a plunging knee line. White opens the gas cape. He's naked, save for an army sock tied on his willy. He wins. Remarks and shouts come in profusion from the spectators. Went on till lights out. As I lay in bed, I wondered if we were really going on the bend. December 24, 1943. Christmas Eve parade. The night before Christmas Eve, after tea, we had all, as was our custom, traipsed across to the battery office, comfortably ensconced on the top floor of a farm building, to read part two orders. Oh, no, says Gunnerwood. Oh, no, no, no. He backs away as though he'd seen Dracula. We are all to parade on the morrow to be inspected by the DOC 10 Corps. Who's he? Said Gunner Forrest. He, I explain, will either be David Niven or someone else. Who's David Niven? David Niven, I explained further, is someone else. Edgington is reading further from part two orders. Oh, Christ, listen to this. Not only an inspection, but we will march past him. That is a total waste of energy. Why doesn't E march past us? But perhaps his legs are unreamy, suggests Edgington, doing a Ritz Brothers face and doing a ridiculous sideways walk. Come, men, he says, to la belle balle de blanco. He leaps a clumsy jeté, sending up muddy sprays. The morning of Christmas Eve, we awoke to find the dawn blowing, but sunny. Caw, it's parky. Tired men coming off guard, they rest their rifles against the wall, yawn and fall on their beds. The guard commander, Sid Price, enters, his pipe wafting morning smoke signals. He hurls his webbing onto the floor. Down, you buggers! Then, a change of tone, as he sees us all abed. Come on, you lazy buggers! It's Christmas Eve! Father's Christmas is on his way with boxes of blanca for all you good little gunnikins! A wave of rude remarks. He chuckles. You are all rude, nasty little gunners, and I'm never going to play mothers and fathers with you again. Sensational news. Eggs for breakfast. A mighty unshaven rush. I race across the courtyard, Edgington close behind me. Trying to break the 4-minute mile? Yes, I'll soon be trying to break the 6-minute boiled egg. It's amazing, this spirit of Christmas. Everyone is cheery. There are smiles on the faces of even miserable buggers. In a sing-song voice, Gunner White recites, Christmas comes but once a year, and when it comes, it brings good cheer. Wrong, says Gunner Dirty Bugger Brady. It's Father Christmas comes but once a year, and when he does, his wife has Christmas Pudding Club fear. 9 o'clock. We are all on our transport heading towards Santa Maria La Fosse, and we all sing, Good King Wenceslas looked out on a feast of Stephen, when the snow lay all about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon at night, though the fuss was cruel, when the poor man came inside, playing with his tool. We are dumped on a raised muddy road without the environs of Santa Maria La Fosse. There are gunners everywhere. We line up next to 74 mediums. We spot Ken Carter and Reg Bennett, who wave and point to their white lanyards. Frost! Shouts Bennett. Stop all that talking! Shouts the sergeant. It's the only language we know, I said. Can we do some mime? Pipes up a voice. Silence! Says the sergeant. The DOC walks along the ranks, stopping every now and then and starting now and then. He stops now and then in front of me. I'm trying to stifle a laugh. What's your name, bombardier? I think it's Milligan, sir. He walked on till he was quite a way away from me. For God's sake, whispered a North Country voice in the ranks behind me. Don't upset him. He could send us back to the front. What do you mean, back to front? Make up your bloody mind. Ah, the Royal Artillery banner striking up. Boom, bang, crash, ta-ra, bam. The bass drummer is so short we can't see his head above the drum. Just a pair of legs hanging underneath. 19 battery! Artage! Halt! Right turn! Greek march!
We swing along the road in the direction of the town and pass the saluting base, which appears to be a gunner in the crouching position covered with a blanket. On it stand the DOC and the OC 2 Agra. As we swing past them, there is a subtle waft of whiskey.
Aye, right,
was the command. We stamp along in fine style. We don't know where we're headed, but we are marching as if we do. The step is getting ragged as the band gets out of earshot. The rhythmic marching becomes a great mass of overlapping steps that sound like we were in an echo chamber. We reach the outskirts of the town and are dismissed.
Now then, commenced Bomberly Griffin, there's 2 hours to see around the town. The lorries will be back here to pick you up at...
He looked at his wristwatch, realized he'd forgotten it, but went on. At 1500 hours.
Any late ones will have to walk back, right? Dismiss!
We repair to a cafe. Ernie Hart points to a sign saying, English sod lads, welcome. In chalk, someone has added, and their money. It's a semi-gloomy interior with a grubby Italian and a mountainous wife.
Quattro coffee and quattro cognac, I signal.
We sat at a circular iron-topped table that I grabbed like a bus steering wheel and started to make motor car sounds. I'm driving this bus to a better area, I said, crouching on the table. Italians at other tables are looking at me and smiling. The British don't usually behave like this. We stayed there till we were stoned. We're all decidedly happy, as the lorries tumble dry us back to the farm. When we arrive, dead on the stroke of one. Those who aren't dead, we carry back to their beds. By 6 o'clock, after plenty of tea, we were sobering up. All talk is of Christmas. Those who've had parcels from home are feeding them, smelling them, tearing little holes and peeking in. Spike Deans had over the pre-Christmas months been keeping a supply of wine and masala, in which G and T Truck had all painted so much per week. He, for some reason, had added sugar to the wines. At this very moment, he was calling the faithful.
G Truck and T Truck, this way to intestinal trouble.
He had the bottles uncorked, and we presented our mugs for the seasonal cheer. By 8 o'clock, we were all merry again, and we went to the gunner's billets and sang carols. Well-meaning insults were hurled from the windows above. Back in our billet, we went to bed and continued consuming the last of the wine. Christmas Day, December the 25th, 1943. Alf Files diary. Sergeant Major Griffin and Sergeant wake us up at tea and rum and we're off. My diary. Late reveille. Don't have to get up. Beeston and Sergeant bring us tea and rum in bed. It was all too much. Give us a kiss, Sarge, I said to Mick Lyon as he filled my battered tea mug. You'll kiss my ass, he said, an unbearable thought. All around, smiling gunners are sitting up like old ladies in geriatric wards and grinning Merry Christmas, they say to each other. We all linger over the rum-laden tea. There's a carol service at RHQ at 1100 if anybody wants to go.
Ah, why not?
It's Christmas, the season of goodwill. Nobody went. So, a regimental parson in a barn merrily sings the first Noel all by himself. Fried eggs and bacon for breakfast. Wow! The morning was spent fiddling around with the stage and props. All seemed set. We then concentrated on thinking about the Christmas dinner.
I will eat mine very, very slowly. I want it to last as long as possible, said Gunner Hume.
They say there's tinned turkey on the menu, I said.
How do you know, said Kidgel, his stomach revolving at the thought of it.
I heard a rumour.
Look, mate, said Kidgel, I don't want a rumour of turkey. I want real bloody one.
Parsons knows and all. So saying, he ran off to practice eating. A detail of layabouts had been rounded up, were erected a long makeshift table laid out in the adjacent barn. It consisted of long planks resting on trestles with blankets for tablecloths. Someone with a soul had stuck thorn leaves and some tin to resemble holly. BSM Griffin's voice rings out in the air.
All right now, come and get it!
We all take off like sprinters and collide as we try to squeeze through the door. Thundering ahead is Kidgel, his legs barely touching the ground. Pounding behind him is Gunner White, his tongue dragging along the floor. The cry goes up,
For God's sake, stop Kidgel before he gets there, or we'll get bugger all!
Like a jigsaw puzzle, we all fit into place around the table. We sat on an assortment of chairs, stools, tins, logs. We're served, as is the tradition of the Royal Artillery, by the officers and sergeants. Lieutenant Walker is the wine waiter, himself having partaken of several pre-lunch drinks. He is missing glasses by a substantial amount. Gunner Musselwhite has a lap full of white Chianti, and Gunner Bailing is getting red wine among the greens.
The sergeants are ladling out tinned turkey, pork, beef, roasted potatoes, sprouts, carrots and gravy. None of our waiters are quite sober, and there is an overlap at the end of the dinner when Sergeant Ryan goes around pouring custard over the turkey. As the wine takes effect, the chatter and the laughter increase. For Duff, we had Christmas puddings and custard. "Hurry up, you buggers," said Sergeant Daddy Wilson. "We're waiting to have ours." There seemed endless helpings and unlimited supplies of red and white wine, but it was a long way from the Dickensian Christmas around a log fire in a parlour with Grandma and Grandpa present. However, when you're pissed, all that nostalgia goes out the window. Gunner Smudger stands on his chair and sings a seasonal lament.
"Oh, bang away, doo-doo, bang away, doo-doo, bang away, good and strong. What are you going to do when you want to blow through and you lose, dear gone?
Merry Christmas," we all shout. The sergeants and officers are returning, carrying makeshift trays laden with bottles of beer, oranges and nuts. Smudger calls for a toast to the officers and sergeants. There follows more toast to the regiment, the king, and in fact, anybody. I distinctly heard, "Gentlemen, the toast is anybody." We gave the sergeants and officers a cheer, and in that order. We left the table looking like Genghis Khan's horsemen and galloped over it. I felt as though they'd galloped over me. There was aught but sleep it all off. We washed our mess tins in those three separate troughs, wash, rinse, disinfect. For those interested in details, these were from oil drums sawn in half and filled with the requisite liquid. In fact, there was to be a quickie in the concert where Brutus stabs Julius Caesar and then proceeds to wash, rinse and disinfect the murder weapon. Those who had thoughts of getting into Naples were frustrated as the city was declared out of bounds due to typhus. "Merry typhus," some of them were saying. The great moment is drawing nigh, the concert. The audience are arriving early, most of them with bottles of beer stuffed in their coats. The programs they're reading were as below. Program concert. Introduction, Spike Milligan, the Herbs, session number 1. 2, Joe Slater, vocalist tenor, as time goes by. 3, Sergeant King, normally known as Ross King, the green eye of the little yellow god. 4, the Royal Horse Hillybillies, otherwise Milligan, Edgington, Files, Kidgel and White. 5, George Shipman, baritone, shipmates of mine. 6, Jock Webster, Scotland Forever. The greatest item of all in scrap, is number 7. Man Mountain Deans, £142, including tin hat and small arms, versus the Barnsley Basher, Rollicking Robinson, £156.5, including truck, less tools. Referee, the young Griff. 8, community singing, all the old favourites led by Spike. 9, BSM Griffin, the ancient Griff, the great mystery. 10, Doug Kidgel, songs you all know and hate. 11, Reg Griffin, assisted by Ken Deans. 12, Lance Bombardier A. Smythe, otherwise known as Smudger Smith. 13, Sergeant Lawrence, airburst by Guinness. 13A, Doug Mad Act. 14, Duke Edgington at the piano. 15, Bags of Backchat from Joe Kearns. 16, Spike Milligan and the Herbs once again. 17, Leslie Spence. 18, Command Post Follies. Scene 1, the only one, same as before. In the field, cast in order of appearance, Gunner and Overworked Act, Lieutenant Walker, Sergeant Gunner Nash, First Subaltern, Lance Bombardier Milligan, Second Subaltern, Bombardier Deans, Battery Captain, Gunner Edgington, Battery Commander, Lance Bombardier Griffin, Two Signalers, Gunner White, Gunner Kearns. Finale, the whole shower, jogging along to the regimental gallop, tune of Whistling Rufus. Finish. Note, blokes attending concert will be searched at the door for hand grenades, bad fruit or packets of V's. If M and V are thrown, please retain tin for salvage. The show, the artiste hidden from view behind a screen of blankets that runs the length of the hall. Behind it all, the secrets of show business are poised to hurl them on an unsuspecting audience. The buildings reverberate to the buzz of conversation. We open with a chord behind the curtains, and then I shout, "Ladies and gentlemen, the 19 Battery Christmas Show!" There's a cheer. The band swings into, "Where the boys from Battery D? Four boys from Battery D. Do 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 dee dee dee." We then switch to our two ocarinas for the Rockamanfina Rumba. In the absence of a good finish, the band all stand up and shout, "Hoy!" Very good. Baffle the audience. Curtain down, we dash off to change. We hear Gunner Joe Slater in his strangled tenor singing As Time Goes By. Edgington is left behind to accompany him on the piano. We keep an ear on the song.
Last song, never dies. Songs for the pound.
I should be singing this, said Kidgel, as he stuck his stringy beard on. Harry will have to be quick, said Files. He's only got the green eye of the little yellow god to change in. Edgington rushes in, while Slater is still taking his applause. Where's me beard, he gabbled. We help him into his gear, and soon he looks like Zeke McCoy of Coon County. Sergeant King is on, and getting a hard time from the lads.
He was worshipped by the ranks. Holy fuck, came the authoritative answer.
You're on, says Jamal Griffin. Files, White and Kidgel set themselves up on the stage. Edgington and I wait in the wings.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Royal Horse Hillybillies.
Boos at a curtain up. The scene, three hillybillies seated drinking raccoon juice and bar sweat from our rum ration jugs. Gales of uncontrollable laughter. Why? Why? Gunner White is showing a pair of testicles hanging in full view from under his nightshirt. Files is paring his toenails with a jackknife. In his hands he holds a dozen three-inch bolts that he drops as his toenails are pared. Kidgel swigs his raccoon's piss and spits it out, and from the back of the hall comes bang as BSM Griffin hits an empty 25-pounder shell case. Bang! Bang! Edgington and I let off our blank cartridge muskets. We had never tried them before, and so loud was the explosion that a great gasp of "Cor bloody hell!" rang to the audience. At the same time, two tin plates dislodged from the roof and covered us with patina of rusts. "Don't fire any more," said a terrified sloggart who was working the curtains. "Enter Edgington and Milligan. Kidgel, war ye to been?" He spit. "Bang!" "Spike, we don't kill the bar." "Bang!" "Edgington, biggest bar I ever seen." "Bang!" "Spike, that bar, when I seen him, he done growl. So I growls back, and he leans to the left. So I lean to the left. He scratches his balls, so I scratch my balls. Then that bar, he done the shit. And I said, 'Bar, you got me there. I done that when I first seed you.'" A few more gags like that, and then we all sing, "I like mountain music, I like mountain played by the Healy Beely Band." Files and guitar, me and Edgington and ocarinas, Kidgel on the raccoon piss jar. The music was indispersed with rhythmic spits and distant dangs in tempo, and we went off a treat. "Gunner's shipment when I seen shipmates of mine," announces Jam Jar. "He'd never seen a bleeding ship," echoes a voice. The curtain goes back to reveal Edgington at the piano in bare feet, dressed as a hillybilly. Shipman has a pleasant baritone voice, inaudible in the lower register. He insists on walking about as he sings, causing numerous clinks and clanks and groans from the stage. His song is frequently interrupted by hissed whispers from the wings. "Keep still." He stops in mid-song to ask the voice what it's saying. "Keep still, the floor's squeaking when you walk about." He then continues, except that his last position was on the extreme right of the stage. So we have a spectacle of a piano on one side, and a hillybilly playing it, and an empty stage, and a singing gunner on the extreme right. He is well received. Jock Webster follows with a series of hoary old Scottish jokes. "Is anything well under the kint? No, man, everything in perfect working order," etc., etc., to the great mock fight twixt Deans and Robinsons. They appeared to be in long johns and plimsolls. They had been rehearsing this mock fight for a week, but it was all pointless, as in the first moment, Deans took a right-hander to the chin that had him groggy, and from then on, Robinson had to nurse him along. The crowd barracks, "Kill him! Call a priest! Send him home!" The fight went the whole distance, and they were given an ovation, especially Deans, when there was blood running from his chin. His party remark were, "You wanted blood, you bastards, well, you got it." Next, I and the mob in community singing. American officers were baffled by songs like, I painted her, up her belly and down her back in every hole and every crack. I painted her old tomato, over and over again. It's BFM Griffin's turn now, and he had quite a skinful, and does a conjuring act that to this day, neither I nor anyone else understands. He doesn't even remember it. He sat hidden under a blanket, pushing cards out through the slit and asking, "What is it? What is it?" A member of the audience would identify it. "Ace of spades." He would then take it back inside the blanket and from the obscurity say, "So it is, so it is." I think he got booed off, and he seemed well pleased with it. Kidgelnex, his old favourite, Sweet Mystery of Life, Drigo's Serenade. "He has a very good voice." "You ought to have it trained," said Edgington. "To run errands," said Files. K
Kitty'll have announced himself. I will sing songs you all know and love. Voice of horror from the back. Oh, no! When Doug had finished, the same voice said, I didn't love or know any of them. Behind the stage, Sid Carter has opened a few bottles of wine to celebrate the show going well. We should wait till the end, really, he said, but with this mob, there might not be any bloody end. Edgington is at the piano, playing his own tunes with that grim, bloody look on his face, as if he expected a shot to ring out from the distance. One of the notes went dead on him, and he brought forth laughter. Whenever he came to the missing note, he stood up and sang the note himself. La! Next, from Liverpool, we have a real scouse, Joe Kearns. He tells lots of Liverpoolian jokes like, my old man got a glass eye. One night he swallowed it. We went to the doctor, and the doctor said, drop him, bend down. And he sees this glass eye looking at him at the back, and he says, what's the matter, don't you trust me? After him, the band are on again. We play a favourite of ours, Tangerine. Da 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 dee. And what in those days were a red hot number? Watch the birdie. Do 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 do. Watch the birdie, and then you give it all you got. Do 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 do. We didn't go that well because the boys had heard us so many times at dances. The finale was a send up of Major Jumbo Jenkins in Command Post Follies, in which we took the piss out of him in no uncertain fashion. He was fuming, but he put a fixed grin on his silly face. We conclude with the cast singing, jogging along to the regimental gallop, to the tune of Jenkins' own favourite, Whistling Rufus, and by God, we got a mighty ovation at the end. The officers came backstage to congratulate us, and with consummate skill drank all our grog. We all got pretty tanked up. Long after everyone had gone to bed, Harry and I sat on the stage drinking and rerunning the show. It had been a great night. Now what? Said Edgington. Now what indeed?